here last week, and we talked about a little bit of Colossians, and which was Paul's letter to the church in Colossae. And I said there that we could study that one passage for months on end because there's a heap of stuff in it. Well, today I want to look at the reading, the epistle reading of Paul's letter to the Romans, which is also, Paul was known to be a literary heavyweight. Apparently, he wasn't that impressive when he spoke. He was a little short guy, apparently. Might have had bad eyesight. Was basically not impressive in person. But his writings were huge. And his letter to the Romans has literally changed the world through Christianity. St. Augustine was converted by a passage in Romans. Martin Luther, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a lot of really big theologian types have been massively impacted by Romans. And for Paul to write to the church in Rome, for him, he intended this as an encouragement. And I'm hoping that you will be encouraged by it as well this morning. He's writing them an encouragement because to be a Christian in Rome in the first century was not a convenient, comfortable thing to do. You might risk your life going to church in Rome. Because in Rome, they had the gods. And each of the gods, Zeus, Apollo, Asclepius, all of these, the adult Sunday schools heard some of these names, had a temple. And sometimes there would be a shrine right on a street in front of the temple. And you were required, when you go by this shrine, to put in a coin, to make an offering. And to say things like, Zeus is Lord. Well, if you're a first century Christian and you're taking your Christianity seriously, you realize that's idolatry. I'm not doing that. Oh, then you're either going to have to go a different street or you're going to risk your life. Because standing at that shrine was a soldier armed with a sword. And if you decide, I'm just walking by, or you're going to say, Jesus is Lord, he might take your head. So Paul is writing to these Romans going, hang on to the faith. This is tough, but it is very worth it. Persecution was not empire-wide yet. There was plenty of persecution in Rome at the time Paul is writing this, but it was mostly kind of mob mentality stuff. It wasn't that the emperor had said, I want Christians to either worship me or die. Emperors did say that, but not just yet. That was about 8 years after Paul wrote this letter. And our reading this morning starts off, I thought this is interesting when I looked it up in the lectionary to prepare for this, because it starts off with, and do this understanding the present time. Isn't that kind of like walking into the middle of the conversation? And do what? Do this. So what is this? Rule number one of Bible study. Context, context, context. You don't just grab a verse and run with it. That's how cults get built. That's how wrong understandings of the Bible get built. You look at the context that this verse is in. Now, the context that this passage is in goes back at least to the beginning of chapter 12 before this, and then the first half of 13. And Paul is saying, do all of this stuff because you understand that time is short. And what is all of this other stuff? It's the stuff of living a Christian life, like you live to God, you live in love, you be humble, you submit to the government if it doesn't cross the line of worshiping Jesus, and You live like a Christian. Paul has just said a chapter and a half of this stuff, and now he gets to this morning's passage, and he says, and do this understanding that the present time, the hour is already come for you to wake up out of your slumber. Why? Big things are going to happen. Paul did not know that Jesus is going to take at least another 2,000 years to get here. Every generation since Jesus ascended has kind of safely assumed, well, it could be in my lifetime. Now, the more we have studied Bible in light of history, we realize that there were things that had to happen. But as of about 1949, it could happen in my lifetime. Paul didn't know that at the time. I love the imagery that Paul uses here. He says, for the night is nearly over, and the day is almost here. Night is nearly over. Why is this night? Paul writes that right now we see through a glass darkly. And the image there is, you take a piece of glass and you run it through a candle and get a bunch of soot on the glass and you look through it, you can see stuff, but it's not very clear. But if that's all you have ever known, you think it's perfectly fine. That's the darkness that we live in. We live in a fallen world. We live in a physical world. But when we reach the last breath and step into eternity, we are going to see Jesus face to face. Not through symbolism, the symbols of candles, or communion, or pictures, or stained glass, or any of that that we use to symbolize Jesus. We're going to see him face to face. And we are going to realize, that life that I lived was through a glass darkly. I didn't really have a really good picture of all of this spiritual stuff that I now understand completely when I get to heaven and go, wow. C.S. Lewis referred to this life as the Shadowlands. I like that picture. He knew, when I get to heaven, it's not going to be images and shadows and a glass darkly. It's going to be face to face. It's going to be clear. D.L. Moody, the evangelist, some days before he passed into glory, said, someday you will read in the papers that D.L. Moody of East Northfield is dead. Don't you believe a word of it. At that moment, I shall be more alive than I am now. I think he's right. I think Paul's right. This is a glass darkly, and yes, we're alive, but we're only as alive as we know how to be, because this is all we've ever known. We don't know how dark this life is. And Paul is saying, this night is almost over. And even if it's not that Jesus is coming back this afternoon, it could be that individually, our darkness is almost over. The longer I live, the shorter life seems to be. When I was a kid, I thought it lasted forever. I mean, it took forever for Christmas to arrive. Never mind, when am I going to get old? Good Lord, when I was 5, I didn't think I was ever going to get old. I'm still hoping not. So when Paul says to the Romans, don't be spending your time with drunkenness and debauchery and carousing, sexual immorality, dissension, and jealousy, is he just being killjoy? Gosh, isn't that the stuff that soap operas are made out of? Isn't that what really, you can sink your teeth into for life? No, that is not. That's not Paul's point. He's not trying to be a killjoy. There are people who think that Christians should have no fun. You've probably known some. I've known some. They think a Christian should be serious all the time, and go around with a look on their face as if they had been baptized in vinegar. And, you know, I just think if anybody on this planet has a right to be joyful, it's us. Because when we're done with this Shadowlands, everything after this is even better. We have a hope that the world hasn't got. And Paul is saying, if the time is short, don't spend it doing this useless stuff that the world does. Jesus didn't come and save you so that you could keep living the way you used to live. He came to give you a new life. A new everything. Jesus bought us on the cross. And the life that he called us to is as different from the world as the deeds of darkness are from the armor of light. And I love, you know, Paul's picture of armor. He describes it in Ephesians chapter 6. There he's talking about spiritual warfare and the warfare that we're all in, and half the time we don't even recognize it because, well, this is all we've ever known because this is the only place we've ever lived. And he's saying, this armor that you need to wear to get through your battle, your spiritual battle of every day, is an armor of righteousness and truth and hope and faith and the gospel. For Christians who lived in Rome, that was a very necessary thing. It would be real easy to live in Rome and get depressed about the fact that, you know, Christians weren't respected. I have to like worship in secret. That's such a bummer. If I just throw in my coin and say that Zeus is Lord, I'd be fine. Or the emperor is Lord, that would be great. And Paul is saying, don't do it. Hang on to what you know is true. It really is worth it. And he starts out with, let us behave decently. Gosh, that just sounds so proper. This is already a different behavior than much of the world. There's an awful lot of the world that doesn't behave decently. But then he goes on further in verse 14 to say, clothe yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ. That will make you different than the world. In pretty much every way that you can think of. And how does one clothe oneself in Jesus Christ? By being like him. By sharing in his humility, his obedience to God, his steadfastness in purpose to serve God and man. This is the life that Jesus bought for us. The life that he wants to equip us to live. The life that will make us stand out from the world around us. Have you ever had somebody come up and maybe they find out you're a Christian? They go, you know, I always knew there was something different about you. You may have never said a word about it. But trust me, we are on display. And the world sees that just by the things you don't do, even if you don't talk about it. If there's gossip at the water cooler at work or whatever, and you go, I don't have time for that. No. Anything you do that doesn't fit into the world's norm, they notice. And we are a walking testimony of Jesus Christ, whether we speak up or not. I love what Francis of Assisi said. Take the gospel into the whole world, and when necessary, use words. That's cool. At the end of this passage, Paul says, and this was always a problem for me as a kid, make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. Well, desires like food, eat on a day like this? Clothing? Shelter? Is that what he's talking about? Am I supposed to fast until I die just to show my piety? That is not what Paul is saying. That is not what the Greek says. See, when you take New Testament was written almost exclusively in Koine Greek, and then it has to get translated into English. And every once in a while you get one of these translation problems, and you go, well, that's what it says in English, but there isn't really a good parallel between English and Greek here. So if you have a bunch of different translations and you look at the same verse and they're wildly different, you can assume that's a problem. That's a translation issue that they have to wrestle with. What the Greek here is saying is, do not plan ahead to gratify your desires. Not saying don't eat, not saying don't have clothes and don't have shelter. He's saying don't plan out your evil ahead of time. Yes, you're going to sin. Welcome to humankind. We all do. But he's saying, put on Jesus and don't plan ahead for sin. Make no provision for sin. That is what it says. To gratify its desires. Life can be tough. The challenges can be exhausting. The trials and temptations can be relentless. But in all of this, Jesus has made us more than conquerors. And he calls us to live lives that glorify him, that look different from the world, and that shine his love into the circles that we have each been planted in. May he strengthen us to do that daily to his glory.
Amen.